Thank you so much, Rabbi Fein. After hearing all the amazing people that you have coming next week, I feel almost humbled, and I'm sorry you have to listen to me for the next 45 minutes. But I do hope we'll be able to learn something meaningful together, and hopefully take something away from it as well. Rabbi Fein, just before we start, what time do I have till?
50?
Okay, that's perfect. Last Shabbos, not this past Shabbos that we immediately came out of, the Shabbos before that, we in B'nai Shurin had the schus of hosting Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon, Rav Yatz Rimon, as a scholar in residence at our shul. There's a program that Mizrahi runs called Israel 360. Mizrahi is a global religious Zionist organization. Israel 360 is a program where they send lots of speakers from Israel to different shuls in Chutz La'aretz. I'd imagine many of you in your respective Bate Knesset probably likely had Mizrahi speakers over the course of that Shabbos. And we had the privilege of hosting with Yosef Tzvi Rimon. Now, do any of you, by a show of hands, have familiarity, vague familiarity, general familiarity with Rav Rimon? Yeah, many of you, I'd say half of you perhaps. So if you don't have familiarity with Rav Rimon, I will tell you that he's really like an amazing, amazing character. I prefaced my introduction to him that Shabbos by noting that he really is one of my personal heroes. It's not every day that you get to introduce one of your personal heroes. If I had to capture Rav Rimon in a single word, it would probably be Mashiach. That would probably be the word that I would choose. He's like that amazing. He's a remarkable Talmud Chacham, a first-rate posek. And not only is he a Talmud Chacham and posek and a teacher of Torah, but he's engaged in these remarkable civic projects in Eretz Yisrael as well to really take care of the population at large, even outside of the confines and realm of the Torah-studying population in Eretz Yisrael. He started an organization back in 2007, or earlier, I think 2005, after the Hitnatkut from Gush Katif, after many Jews were taken from their homes in Gush Katif. The government in Israel, classically, had no plan to resettle them, had no plan to find them jobs or anything like that. He took it upon himself, this is a Rebbe in a yeshiva, this is not a business executive, he took it upon himself to try to create some kind of program to find all of them jobs, and he did. And then when that was completed, and they all had jobs, he wanted to take that infrastructure and use it for other disenfranchised populations in Israel, so he uses it now. It's an organization that was rebranded as La Ofek. He uses that to support Ethiopians in Israel who face all sorts of challenges in Eretz Israel and to give them job training and things like that. And he has so many other projects. He started this major Shidduch network in Eretz Israel. He's really somebody who not only is, again, a first-rate Torah scholar and teacher of Torah, but somebody who has taken on the broader challenges that Klal Yisrael faces on his own shoulders and has really done his best to combat them and has really actually done a lot, has really made significant strides on lots of significant issues impacting the Jewish people at large. So I actually want to share with you some of the Torah that I delivered in introducing him. The Torah that I delivered introducing him was not, of course, a source sheet. I kept things very short so that everybody could hear from Rav Rimon himself. But tonight we'll really try to expound upon the ideas a little bit more. What I really want to do is share with you what I said about him, but also expand on that idea to share how I think it applies to me and how it applies to all of you. As reflecting on three different stages of life, Rav Rimon, who's saving Klal Yisrael, a very large gap to myself, who's a little bit older than you all, and then to you at your stage of life, where does the idea that we're going to develop tonight and the tension that we're going to express tonight, how does it apply to us all? That's going to be our goal for this evening. And in doing so, we're going to study a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. That's going to be our major focus. A Mishnah that appears in source number one, Perek Beis, Mishnah Beis. Now, before we take a look at the Mishnah, let me offer a prefatory note. How many people here have studied Pirkei Avos at some point or another? I imagine roughly everyone has probably at least heard something on Pirkei Avos at one point or another. But it's important to remember that Pirkei Avos is a Masechet of Mishnah. It's a Masechet of Mishnah. We often look to Pirkei Avos for wisdom, for teachings, for guidance in how to live our lives, for inspirational ideas and things like that. And certainly Avos serves that purpose. It's certainly not your standard tractate of Mishnah. It definitely stands out from other Masechtos that focus on more halakhic topics. But it still is Mishnah. It still was edited by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. And accordingly, We shouldn't just look to Maseches Avos when we're looking for a yearbook quote. Yes, it is helpful for that too. But when we're actually properly studying Maseches Avos, we need to study it the way we would study any other Mishnah, with the same rigor and depth and sophistication and analytics and analysis that we would any other Mishnah. And that's really what I want to do tonight. So I'm going to start just by reading the Mishnah in source number one. And my task to you is, a little bit of a strange task, but my task to you is, how many messages or ideas are being projected in this Mishnah? Broadly speaking, in the broadest terms, how would you break down this Mishnah if you had to into different sections? I think many of you, if you study Tanakh, lots of times when we study a parak of Tanakh, we try to break down its thematic themes into different sections and things like that. I want to break down this Mishnah into different sections, and I would ask you, what are, again, the broad-speaking general messages that are being communicated in this Mishnah to us, reading this Mishnah thousands of years after it was originally composed? Source number one. Rabbi Gamliel Benosha Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi Omer. Of course, one central feature of Pirkei Avos is that it is deeply connected to personalities. It is called Avos, right? It is the teachings of our fathers. And if you've studied Pirkei Avos, you will know that much of it is about, again, the personalities that are teaching the Torah and what exactly they are sharing. Here we have something from Rabbi Gamliel, who is the son of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Is that going to be significant? Perhaps. Who was Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi? What do we know about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi? We know that, again, he was the redactor of the Mishnah. He's the one who put together the Mishnah. We know that he was also the Nasi. What does that mean, that he was the Nasi? He wasn't just a Torah leader, but in a certain sense, he was a Jewish political leader as well. Is there significance to that? We'll see, perhaps. So Rabbi Gamliel report, the son of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi reports, Yafet Talmud Torah im Derech Eretz, Sheyigias Shnehem Mishkachas Avon. Talmud Torah is best with Derech Eretz. We're going to leave Derech Eretz undefined for now. We'll just call it Derech Eretz. Torah, learning Torah is best with Derech Eretz. So when you have both, that's how you're able to avoid iniquity. That's what enables you to avoid sin. V'chol Torah she'ein imam malacha, sofa betela v'goreras avon. And all Torah that does not have work accompanying it, Sova betela v'goreres avon, ultimately it will be rendered void, and it too will cause sin. Okay? V'chol, I'm just reading and translating right now. V'chol ha'amelim im ha'tzibur, anybody who toils with the tzibur for projects, for communal projects, for national projects, civic projects, yehu amelim imahem l'shem shamayim, you should work on behalf of the tzibur l'shem shamayim, you should do it for the right reasons, for the right values, for the honor of heaven. Shezchus avosa misayasan, because the merit of their forefathers, i.e., namely, the forefathers of the tzibur, help and assist with those projects. Vitzidkasam omedes la'ad, their righteousness, the righteousness of those forefathers is everlasting. Ve'atem ma'ale ani aleichem sachar harve ki'ilu asisen. And you, those who work on behalf of the tzibur, I give you great reward as if you yourself had done it. A rather ambiguous line that we are going to focus on tonight. But again, just to translate the basic words, I give you reward as if you yourself had done it. Any thoughts on this Mishnah, like how to break down this Mishnah? Are there multiple messages being projected? One unified message? What are your thoughts on the Mishnah? You have something back?
I'd say that there are three messages.
Okay, go ahead. Okay, good. Number one, Torah and Derech Eretz. Good. Okay, so number one is Torah and Derech Eretz. The second is Torah im Melacha. And number three? Excellent. And the third is it work on behalf of the Tzibur. Okay? What's your name?
Vered.
One more time?
Vered.
Okay, so Vered breaks the Mishnah down into three categories. Number one, Torah im Derech Eretz. Number two, Torah im Melacha. Right? And number three is work on behalf of the tzibur. Now, Vered, let me ask you a question because you broke down the mission that way. How are you defining Derech Eretz?
I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
I would say that it probably means something to do with people.
With people?
Yes.
Okay. And what about with people? What would we, do you have? Can you give me any more descriptive terms than?
Well, Derech Eretz, like, literally means the land. So
correct.
Part of the Torah,
nice verses. I think many of us would probably define Derech Eretz as a common decency, right? Of being a decent person, right? Derech Eretz, the way of the land, common decency. So that's how Vered is defining Derech Eretz. And if you define Derech Eretz that way, I think your breakdown of the Mishnah is quite good. Now, is that the definition of Derech Eretz? So I told you before that we're going to deliberately leave that term vague. Let's see what the term means in source number two. The Meiri is one of the classic commentaries of the Rishonim on the on Shas in general, and on Pirkei Avos in particular. The Meiri was Rabbeinu Menachem HaMeiri. He lived in Provence, in an area of the south of France and the north of Spain. Back in the times of the Rishonim, it wasn't just Ashkenaz and Sfarad. We think of Jews, broadly speaking, as Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. You go back hundreds of years, and there were many other quote-unquote types of Jews as well. So there was a whole separate community in again, the north of France, the south of Spain, sandwiched right between Ashkenaz in France and Sfarad in Spain, right between them, called Provence, or Languedoc is another term that's used to describe the region. And the Meiri was one of the Gedolim of that region, of the Provençal region, and he came from that school of Rishonim. And the Meiri offers two approaches as to what Derech Eretz means. So let's see source number two. Yafet Talmud Torah in Derech Eretz. Yesh Mefarshim Derech Eretz. There are those who explain that Derech Eretz means His Askos Beparnasaso Huschoros. It means work in order to, what's Parnasa? To make a living. Uba Al Derech Tova Chachma Im Nachala. And it's in, akin to other things that we find where the Torah says that it's best to work towards wisdom while also making sure that you are attaining, or you are attending to your material needs, that you're making a parnasa. Okay? That is the Meiri's definition of Derech Eretz. The second definition he offers, in the second paragraph of source number two, is the definition that we tend to use when we talk about Derech Eretz, and the one that Vered was assuming when she read the Mishnah as well. V'yesh lefaresh, there are those who explain, Derech Eretz, what is Derech Eretz? Musar. What is Musar? Literally, what does the word literally mean? We have Musar Seder. What does Musar literally mean? It means ethical behavior, ethics. Umidos, and proper character. You need those two things. You need proper character and you need Torah. And he goes on to explain why those two things are both important. I'm going to leave off on reading the rest of the Meiri just in order to save time, but if you want, it's provided there for you. He says that, therefore, that is the second approach to Derech Eretz. Now, within that approach to Derech Eretz, again, that was the one that is the way we traditionally interpret Derech Eretz. There are three parts of the Mishnah, as Vered said before. Derech Eretz, Melacha, and work on behalf of the Tzibur. But if you take the Meiri's first definition of Derech Eretz, that Derech Eretz is what? Is working for a Parnasa. Now let me ask you to regroup the Mishnah. Vered, if you had to regroup the Mishnah now, within that definition of Derech Eretz, how would you do so? So in essence, there would not be three parts of the Mishnah, but rather two parts of the Mishnah. And ultimately, that is actually why the Meiri adopts that view and prefers that view of Derech Eretz to the other one. If you look, in again, back in source number two, in the middle of that long paragraph, right after the ellipsis, if you see on the third to bottom line, there's an ellipsis there. It says, "Ulapirish zeh yiyeh inyan b'chol Torah she'eini mamalacha inyan acher meyuchad b'fnei atzmo bilti nimshach l'masha lefanav." He says, if you take the view that Derech Eretz is common decency, is ethics, is proper behavior, the way we often interpret it, he says, then it doesn't really have anything to do with the next line about making a living. He says, really, again, if you want to see this all as one collected unit, you want to understand how the Mishnah properly flows, the approach that says that Derech Eretz is actually working for a living works much nicer, because then it fits with the phrase that follows it. But, you know, there's importance to ethical behavior in its own right, the Meiri says, but ultimately that is how he breaks down the Mishnah, and that is the majority view in the Rishonim. So now, returning to our Mishnah at the beginning, source number one, we now really have two sections to it. Let's just read the Mishnah again. Rabbi Gamliel ben Osher, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi Omer, Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, says, Yavet Talmud Torah in Derech Eretz, Sheyikiyah Shnei Mishkachas Avon. It is good to learn Torah and also pursue a living, because if you have both, you have a living and you have Torah, then you'll be preserved from iniquity and sin. The whole Torah she'eini mamalacha sofa b'ketela b'goreres avon. And if you only have one of those two things, if you only have Torah but don't have work, you don't have a parnasa, that will ultimately lead towards iniquity and sin. And then you have the pivot, v'chol ha'amelim im ha'tzibur, then you have the pivot to work on behalf of the community, on behalf of the tzibur, yiyu amelim imam l'shem shamayim, and then he talks about work on behalf of the tzibur. So broadly speaking, we now have two sections to our Mishnah, the first about making a living, the second about work on behalf of the tzibur. Now let's look at each of those sections independently. And then our task is going to be to determine whether they are just two separate things that Rabban Gamliel ben Osher of Yehuda HaNasi happened to like, or whether there is a common theme between them. That is one of the meta questions that we frequently ask in Pirkei Avos. In Pirkei Avos, you have lots of Tanaim telling us lots of good things to do. But a question that we can always raise is, do these happen to be different things that Hillel or Shammai or Rabbi Eliezer, or whoever it may be, different things that they happen to believe in, or whenever they present multiple things within a single Mishnah, is there some kind of common thread, some kind of common denominator that's uniting them? And really, the truth is, the answer could be either one. There's no problem with saying that Rabbi Gamliel ben Osher of Yehuda HaNasi had multiple messages to project to the Jewish people, and multiple messages to teach us. But obviously, if they're included with the same Mishnah, it's appealing to try to see if there is any common theme that unites them. So let's look at each of these parts of the Mishnah. We'll try to determine whether or not there's a common theme. And then, like I said, we'll try to see if there's any takeaway for us. Why is it important to have work accompanying Talmud Torah? We seem to find three views in terms of what the value of work is. Let's start with Rashi. Rashi, I think, takes the most practical view of what the value of work is. Source number three. Why do you need both? Why do you need work? That work together with Torah will help you to avoid sin. Because you are learning and involved with Torah, but you also have some form of a living in order to make sure that you're able to provide, you make sure that you actually have a means towards a livelihood. Because of that, you won't be tempted to steal from others. If you just have Torah and you don't have any way of making a living, then Rahman al-Azan, your moral compass may at some point go astray, and you may be tempted to start stealing from others. Good to have a parnasa, so you won't be tempted to steal. And Rashi doubles down on that in the next line. The sof betela, second line of source number three, ligror avon. If you only have Torah, then ultimately it will cause iniquity. If you don't have any work, why? Kach kasav haMishnah, that's what the Mishnah says. Lafisha I efshalo below mazonos. Rashi makes a very basic and intuitive point. Nobody, no matter how holy you are, can live without basic sustenance, without basic food, without basic drink, without basic shelter. So ultimately, you're not going to have any form of livelihood. You're going to be stealing, like Rashi said before. You're going to come by your livelihood at the expense of others. And ultimately, you're going to forget your learning as well. Now, interestingly, I don't know if anybody knows the answer to this. The language that Rashi uses, holech v'torah u'melastem es abrios. That language of melastem es abrios is not Rashi's own language. Where is it from? Anyone know? Where is Rashi borrowing that language from? Excellent. Ben Sora Rumora. There's an instance where the Torah says that, what's the halacha by Ben Sora Rumora? You have this rebellious wayward son. What does the Torah say? Oh, that's what the Gemara says. You're jumping to the Gemara already. What does Parshas Kisetze tell us? That you put him to death, right? You put him to death for stealing some wine, for drinking gluttonous. Yeah, it's not behavior that we recommend, the raucous behavior that you have this child, steals from his parents, goes and buys alcohol and gets drunk. So that's not behavior that we recommend, but it's hardly deserving of death. So what does the Gemara say? Why is he killed? Because he is nidon al shem sofo. He is judged by, we just assess the trajectory of this child, where he's going to end up. We say that he's likely going to end up murdering others and engage in all sorts of criminal activity. So because he is going to be milastem es abrios, because he's going to be a menace to society, we proactively put him to death. Now, is that actually how the nature of Ensor Remora? Is that a halakhic argument? That now, if we were learning the 8th paragraph of Sanhedrin, we would talk about some of those topics. But that's where the language of Rashi comes from, milastem es abrios. He says it's important to work because if you don't work, you're just going to be tempted to steal, and you may end up on a path that you'll never be able to recover from. So make sure that you have a safe parnasa so that you're not tempted in that regard. That's Rashi's approach. Rabbeinu Yonah offers an alternate approach. Rabbeinu Yonah is one of, again, our classic Rishonim. We don't have so many of the writings of Rabbeinu Yonah on Shas. We have his Aliyos to Rabbeinu Yonah on certain Meseftos. But he's written a number of critical hashkafic works. Probably the most famous is his Sha'arei Tshuva, which is a pretty central Musar work, right up there with like the Ramchal's Mesilas Yesharim, among the most classic Sifrei Musar. And Rabbeinu Yonah's commentary on Pirkei Avos is also a classic. It's just a remarkable work. I really strongly recommend, if you're looking for some kind of new angle towards Musar learning or character refinement and the like, I would urge you to pick up Pirkei Avos with Rabbeinu Yonah's commentary. It's really quite rich. It's a very rich work. Rabbeinu Yonah offers a different approach as to why a lack of work may be bad. And here I think there's profound psychological insight. Source number four. Why do you need both? You need Torah and you need work. The combination fends off the Yetzer Hara. And then he explains why. Second line of source number four. Because you're going to be so invested and involved, and in essence, you're going to be tired through the work, your toils in Torah and Malacha, you're going to be investing all of your energy in Torah and work, lo yishlot alav yetzer hara. Therefore, you won't have the yetzer hara won't have power over you. Why? Ki b'chol eis asher lo yihye dashen v'shamin, lo yarav lo la'asos averos. Rabbeinu Yonah makes an insight, again, I think this is something that I found to be true time and time again, in my own life, in the lives of my students, in the lives of congregants as well. When you're not sitting back, satisfied and doing nothing, you are not tempted to do Avera. What Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is that very often, the best antidote towards temptation to make bad decisions is just involvement in productive activity. It doesn't even matter what the productive activity is, frankly. It could be Torah, that's obviously an ideal, but it could just be malacha too. It could just be any other form of productive labor that you're engaged in on behalf of society. Just something productive that you are doing. Usually when you are engaged in productive activity, that's not when your mind wanders and starts tempting you to make poor decisions. Very often, poor decisions are made when you don't have any other outlet for engagement in productivity. I found again with my own high school students, very often, the ones that made really grave bad decisions, let's say with substance abuse and the like, were very often the ones who didn't have investment in other causes. And again, I'm not talking about the kids who were learning Torah all the time. If you were serious in my experience, about a club, a hobby, a sports team, something like that, very often those were not the kids that were sucked into that vicious and horrific cycle of poor decision-making that often really derails a kid early on and makes it difficult for them to recover. If you have engagement in something, anything, something productive, that is very often an antidote and very often a pointer in the right direction in terms of life's choices. Trevino concludes on the third line of source number four. L'chein yasur b'torah shemateshes kochol shel adam v'gam b'malachto v'kedecha yosef v'lo yamor batel lo'olam pen yis'anei v'ram l'vavo l'shkoach has Hashem alokav. He says you should really be involved in Torah and work. The way he puts it is you're going to be really, really tired. I don't think he means that, oh, you're just going to be exhausted at the end of the day. What he means is you're investing all of your energies into different forms of productive labor and activity, and therefore you won't be tempted to go on a different path. So that's approach number two to what the value of productive labor is. Rashi says it's just so that you have a parnasa, because you don't want to steal. I mean, Yonah is saying there's something about engagement in productive labor as a means towards fending off the yetzer hara and temptation to sin. Third approach is not mentioned explicitly in the Rishonim, but comes from my Rebbe, Rav Aaron Lachmanzin Zatzal. Rav Aaron Lachmanzin was the Rosh Hashiva in Yeshivat Har Etzion in the Gush for many years. He was Rosh Hashiva before that here in Yeshiva University. And he was a remarkable Gadol B'Yisrael. Among many other things, he was the son-in-law and one of the greatest students of Rav Soloveitchik. And he gave a series on Pirkei Avos, actually in English. Most of his Shirim in Eretz Yisrael were given in Hebrew. This was given in English because even when he went to Eretz Yisrael, he remained the Rosh Kolol of the Grus Kolol. For those of you who do not know, YU has a campus in Yerushalayim, Eretz Kodesh, called the Grus campus, and they have a kolol there. So Rav Lichtenstein for many years was the Rosh Kolol there, and he gave a series on Pirkei Avos in English. I was not in the Grus Kolol when he gave this series. I unfortunately never made it to the Grus Kolol in general, but it was recorded. You can find this on YU Torah, and I strongly recommend going through it. It's a little bit hard to understand him. Certainly in his later years, it was very difficult to understand his speech patterns. It was difficult to understand what he was saying. But he has this series online, and it's quite worthwhile. He made a third argument, which was something that really permeates many of his writings, where he argued that perhaps there is just objective value to engagement in work. he noted that if you look at another Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, in source number 5, Shemaya and Avtalion report, Shemaya and Avtalion kiblu mehem, Shemaya and Avtalion were the next set. Again, the first paragraph of Pirkei Avos goes through all different sets of Talmid HaChachamim and the chain of transmission. So Shemaya and Avtalion received the Mesorah. Shemaya Omer, what would Shemaya say? Es hov es ha-melacha, usna es ha-rabanus. Love work and hate Rabbanus, hate the rabbinate. That is every rabbinate's favorite Mishnah. Is it Havas HaMalacha, Asnas HaRabbanus? Rabbanus here doesn't really mean rabbinate. It means like positions of grandeur. But it means Ahovas HaMalacha, you should love work. Why should you love work? If you look at Avos Rabbi Nasan, which is of course the Mesechtos Ketanos that elaborate on Pirkei Avos, source number 6. Ahovas HaMalacha, Ketzad. What does it mean, love work? Melamin Shehe Adam Ohevas HaMalacha, Ve'aliyah Adam Sone Es HaMalacha. Says, don't think that work is such a bad thing. Don't hate work. In the Western world, there's this problem of leisure. Everybody's looking to maximize their leisure time, and work is considered a problem. Work is considered a necessary evil at best, or an unnecessary evil, just an objective evil at worst. But the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos offers an alternate view. We weren't created, Hashem didn't put us here just to sit around and be idle for the entirety of our lives. Hashem put us here to do something, to engage, to be active, to be proactive, to change, to create. So don't hate work. Ehovas HaMalacha. And then the Mishnah goes further and says, the end of the first line of source 6, Shekashem Sha Torah Nitna Bebris, Kach HaMalacha Nitna Bebris. Just like there was a covenant that Hashem sealed through Torah, He sealed a covenant, perhaps a more universal covenant, through Malacha, just through work. Rav Lichtenstein would point out that if you look carefully at Bereishis Perek Aleph and Bereishis Perek Beis, in this case Bereishis Perek Beis, Hashem places Adam HaRishon in Gan Eden, right? Vayasam Sandal Ben Gan Eden. Why? What are the next two words? Anyone know? Bereishis Perek Beis. Why? So I hear so many people whispering it. Le'ovda u'le shomra. Le'ovda u'le shomra. Adam HaRishon is placed in the Garden of Eden. This is literally paradise, right? Why was he placed there? Le'ovda u'le shomra. To work and to guard. You think that in paradise, in Gan Eden, Adam HaRishon would be able to relax, right? Just sit back and like have some kind of drink with an umbrella in it and watch the waves beating on the shore. But no, even when Adam HaRishon was put in Gan Eden, he was placed there, le'ovda. Once again, our purpose here is not just to sit and be idle and just to kind of passively absorb the elements around us. Hashem placed us here to do, to create, to work, to build. And so, perhaps there's just objective value to labor, to work, in accordance with the covenant that Avos Rabbi Nasan describes, that is forged through work. And it quotes, the Mishnah, the Avos Rabbi Nasan quotes a pasuk as well. If you look at the end, what's the pasuk that it quotes? Sheish es yamim ta'avod v'asisa kol melachtecha v'yom hashvi'i shabbos l'Hashem elokecha. Usually we read that pasuk as saying, 6 days you should work, but it's the real focus is, of course, on Shabbos. That is the day of rest. The way Avos Rabbi Nasan is creatively reading this pasuk, it is saying that both components, the 6 days of work and the day of rest, are both parts of the covenant that we forge with Hashem, and so there's objective value to labor. So you have three approaches in terms of the first half of the Mishnah as to what exactly the value of work is. That is the first half of our Mishnah. Fine. What about the second half? So the second half, you will recall, if you go back to source number 1, talks about work on behalf of the tzibur. Let's go to source 1, second line. I'm going to count the words for you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 words in. Kol ha'amelim im ha'tzibur, yichu amelim imahem l'shem shamayim. If you're working on behalf of the tzibur, you should do so l'shem shamayim. Unfortunately, there are lots of people who take public positions for other ulterior motives, for other reasons. Perhaps they're interested in kavod, perhaps they're interested in moving the tzibur in one particular direction due to some personal agenda. There could be all sorts of other reasons why one engages in public service. So the Mishnah first reminds us to engage in public service for the right reasons, do it l'shem shamayim. The Mishnah continues, remember that the merit of the tzibur is great. The merit of our forefathers continues to last. There's a certain power to the tzibur that exists beyond the power of individuals. That's, again, another rich topic in its own right. And then, like I said to you at the outset, the line that I wanted to focus on, and you, I give you reward as if you yourself have performed. What in the world does that mean? And you people who engage and work on behalf of the tzibur, I give you reward as if you yourself did it. So once again, I want to see two approaches in the Rishonim. We'll start with Rabbeinu Yonah. Source number 7. What does it mean that you receive reward as if you yourself did it? Kilomar, what this means to say is the following. The low second line, al yedeichem. Even though we just got finished saying that really it's the schus, it's the merit of the forefathers that are going to ultimately ensure that the tzibur, that the Klal Yisrael are successful, it's not going to be due to your individual labors, it's going to be due to that broader sense of merit of their ancestors. Second line, third word. Nonetheless, atem ha'oskim, you who engage in that work on behalf of the tzibur, ma'ale ani aleichem ki ilunasa kol tzorkeyem al yedeichem uvizchuschem. Don't think that just because the tzibur is going to be guaranteed success that you have no role to play and that you receive no reward for your labor and endeavors. Recognize that you still receive reward for the effort that you put in. It's almost akin to what Mordechai tells Esther in the climactic moments of Megillas Esther, where Esther's wondering, should she go before Ahasuerus to plead on behalf of her people? There's danger and peril involved. And Mordechai says, He says, look, ultimately there will be salvation for the Jewish people. But it could be that you were placed here in this moment in order to indeed secure that salvation. There's a role for you to play. There's significance to what you're doing. Make sure that you step up in this moment. Rabbeinu Yonah says, look, the tzibur is always going to be fine. They're always going to have the merit of their forefathers. But there's still great merit and value in the labor that you do on their behalf. Kach pirshu arishonim zal. Says that's the approach of many rishonim. He offers a slight variation of that. Yesh l'paresh, third line, od pirush acher. I'm going to suggest something else Rabbeinu Yonah says. Chola oskim imat tzibur. Yiyu oskim imayim l'shem shamayim. Everybody who works on behalf of the tzibur should do it l'shem shamayim, as the Mishnah says, for the right reasons. V'al tomar lama li hatzara hazos l'tzroach b'tzarchei, fourth line, tzibur. Don't say, oh, what do I need all this hassle for to engage in communal labor? As a community rabbi, I never ever think that. Chas v'shalom. But yeah, sometimes it's really difficult. Sometimes you do think that. Sometimes you just wonder, why do I need this headache? He says, don't think that. Why? V'af kiyaset tzedaka aleihem levad matan haschar ki mamonam hu. He says, you might think, let's read that line one more time. Fourth line, second word. V'af kiyaset tzedaka aleihem. Let's say he gives an example. You're going around raising communal funds. You're a fundraiser. And you raise lots of money. But ultimately, the money is coming from the tzibur. It's not coming from your own pockets. It's not coming from your own bank account. So you may think that the reward, the schar, is exclusively for those that gave. Because it's their money. He says, no. Don't think that. He can fly in ketiv la'atvacha va'agurecha. Three lines up on the bottom. He says, no, you still have great reward. You're going to succeed because of Schus Avos. And then after the colon on that line, three lines up on the bottom. He says, when you engage in communal labor, you start a fundraising project and you raise $2 million. Rabbeinu Yonah says, "Ma'ale ani alecha sachar ki ilu asisa." I give you reward as if you did it. Means Hashem considers it as if you were the one who independently donated from your own bank account those $2 million. You start a chesed project in which people are motivated to engage in chesed, and they do thousands of hours of chesed collectively. Hashem considers it as if you yourself did those thousands of hours of chesed, so you are getting great reward for the tzibur's work. So Rabbeinu Yonah offers these two approaches that says, when you engage in work on behalf of the tzibur, you receive the reward for the collective efforts of the tzibur. That's Rabbeinu Yonah's approach. It's very inspiring. It's a motivator to engage in communal work. But the Rambam in source number 8 offers a different approach that is much more sobering. The Rambam says the following. Ba'atem ma'ala ani aleichem sachar. This last line is what Hashem says to those who work on behalf of the tzibur. What does it mean that I give you reward as if you did it? Rambam says the following. There are certain times where you're not going to be able to do a mitzvah. Second line of source number 8. Because you're going to be so involved in trying to do this work on behalf of the tzibur, raising funds, motivating people to step up, doing all sorts of tedious, frustrating work on behalf of the community, you're going to be held back in your own service of Hashem. You're going to be held back in your own performance of mitzvos. The Amar, so the Mishnah tells you, this is after the comma of the second line of source 8, Shashem yachshiv lahem schar maisa ha-mitzvah ha-hi v'afal pi shalo asa'uha. Recognize that there are times when you're going to want to learn Torah and you won't be able to. You're going to want to daven with kavana and you won't be able to. You will want to personally engage in an act of chesed and you will not be able to because you are motivating others to do so. Says the Mishnah, Hashem gives you reward as if you did it. As long as you are engaged in communal work for the right reasons, l'shem shamayim, Hashem gives you reward as if you did it. And the Meiri in source number 9 is a similar approach. We're not going to document how the Meiri is slightly different from the Rambam right now. But what the Rambam highlights in this last line of the Mishnah is a certain tension that exists within religious life. The tension between pursuit of one's own spiritual growth and giving to others, facilitating the spiritual growth of others. If you look back at the title of the shiur, I made the title of the shiur, Personal Growth Giving to Others, and the delicate balance of spiritual selfishness with spiritual generosity. And that's exactly the tension that the Rambam is describing here. It's not just that when you work on behalf of the tzibur, it's so great, you receive so much reward, it's all wonderful, it's all good. The Rambam says recognize that it comes at a personal cost. There is a personal cost to it. But Hashem rewards you for that personal cost nonetheless. And I think this Rambam, I'm reminded of a story that happened when I first started teaching in high school. I had another Rebbe in the school where I was teaching who was a friend, close friend and a mentor of mine. And I was lamenting to him one morning after Shacharis how painful it was to try to daven when you are overseeing a room filled with teenagers who aren't necessarily interested in davening. And you're really just focused on disciplinary issues, making sure that everybody's maintaining proper decorum instead of focusing on your davening. And I was just complaining about how difficult that was, how I just wanted to daven in the morning, and how I wasn't able to do so. And he turned to me and said a line that I carry with me to this day. He said, when you went into this profession, the profession being chinuch, teaching Torah, he says, you thought it was only gashmias that you were giving up? You thought it was only your salary that you were giving up? Let's be very clear, he said, you were sacrificing ruchnias too. You are making personal sacrifices in terms of your own spiritual growth, your ability to daven, your ability to approach Hashem, in order to facilitate others' ability to do so as well. If you take the Rambam's approach, in my mind, the two segments of our Mishnah that we started with are actually quite parallel to each other. Because you know what they both deal with? They both deal with a balance between competing values. That is a necessary balance, but also a difficult balance, in order to maintain proper equilibrium within our spiritual lives. The first half of the Mishnah is about balancing Torah with work. And that's not an easy question to answer. If you look at source number 11, which we're not going to look at inside right now, the Gemara in Brachos Daf Lamed Hey has a very famous debate regarding what the proper balance between Torah and work should be. Should you focus only on Torah? Should you work as well? That's a major and large question. And perhaps the locus classicus, the focal point of that sugya, is the Gemara in Brachos Daf Lamed Hey that appears in source number 11. But everybody agrees that you're trying to struggle with a certain balance. A balance between focus on Torah narrowly, that again, most sublime form of spiritual growth, and other things that are necessary. Working for a parnasa, whatever the value of that is, we saw three approaches to it, there's a balance that's needed. And the end of the mission describes another form of balance within our spiritual lives. The tension that exists between focusing on our own spiritual growth and giving to others. Now, when I introduced Rav Rimon, going back to how I started, I noted that for some people, that tension does not seem to exist. Some people just manage to transcend it entirely, to seem to just learn as much Torah as they possibly can, be the greatest Torah scholars they possibly can, and also manage to save Klal Yisrael in countless different ways at the same time. Some people seem to transcend that gap. For others, I speak for myself, I feel that tension very acutely, on a regular basis. It is something that's very difficult when you are involved in teaching Torah, and you're involved in Iskei Tzibur, as the Mishnah describes, when you're involved in work on behalf of the community, it does come at a personal price in many instances. I just highlighted it to you a moment ago. It does come at a personal spiritual price. That is an acute tension. But I want to close with how this equilibrium plays out for all of you. And I think for you, it plays out in a way that's distinct from rabbinic leaders. It's different now from the way it will play out for you 10 or 20 years from now, or the way it did 10 years ago in your lives. I think you occupy a unique place in our communities that makes this tension actually in some ways far better than you would imagine. What I want to share with you is the following. I think to a very large degree, you all at this stage in your lives have a remarkable ability to impact the community, to do, to work, to act on behalf of the community at large, simply through working on yourselves. And I'll say two things that I think at the outset will appear contradictory, but I really don't think they are. First thing I'll tell you is the following. At this stage in your lives, in that balance between working on yourselves and giving to others, I would prioritize the former rather than the latter. You are all young. You're not all the same age, but you're within the same, let's say, 5-year span, or certainly 7-10-year span. You're at an age where you are investing in yourselves, where you are still discovering yourself, where you're deciding on the path that you're going to take for the rest of your lives. And I think the investment that you all make in yourselves, spiritual investments that you make in yourselves now, will pay very significant dividends down the road. That doesn't mean you should be entirely selfish. You should find some time that you're giving to others. Chesed in some capacity or another is essential to the soul of any Jew. But in that balance that we all deal with at this stage, I think you are all best served, and frankly, I think Klal Yisrael is best served, if you are spiritually investing in yourself so that you will ultimately reach a point when you have so much more to give to others. At the same time, there is so much that you all have to offer to the community at large. And it is something that I, as a rabbi, cannot achieve, and that none of your rabbinic leaders can achieve. When we talk about community, when we talk about communal structure, when we talk about family structure, we often talk about the impact that older generations have on younger generations. We talk about the Shalsheles HaMesorah, passage of our timeless values, it's central to Pirkei Avos, how we pass from one generation to the next, and there's obviously much merit to that. That is the primary direction of impact and change that occurs in over the course of thousands of years of Jewish history, the older generation gives to the younger generation. But make no mistake, the direction of influence goes in the opposite way as well. There is also exchange and ways in which you can impact an older generation. Many ways in which you can impact an older generation. Just by being yourselves and pursuing the greatest spiritual growth that you can achieve. Again, I'll offer some personal reflections here for a moment. My parents were not zochet to have any extensive Jewish education. They really did not. My mother had basic day school education, but for high school was already in public school. My father had a yeshiva education, but it was not a particularly good yeshiva education per se. And he also lost his father 6 months after his bar mitzvah. So he didn't really have like a male role model to follow. He didn't really have somebody that was guiding him in his process of religious growth. So they never really had extensive Jewish education. They did the best with what they had. My father can't read a Gemara. You know, he was never given the training or the skills to do those things as a child. And certainly they, like everybody else, like all of us through life, have had a spiritual journey. But I think part of that spiritual journey was through their own children. I merited to have educational opportunities that my parents did not. They sent me to yeshivas that they did not have the opportunity to go to. And then I spent time studying in Eretz Yisrael, and I came to YU. I achieved levels that they never could have, because they were never given the opportunity to. And the same was true for my younger brothers. And with that process came a spiritual journey for them too. And I think I speak on their behalf now. I think they would certainly say this. But their relationship to Torah and mitzvot is not the same as it was 33 years ago when I was born. It's not the same as it was 20 years ago or 10 years ago. There was a process by which when we learned more and understood more and appreciated more and incorporated it in our own lives, they began to appreciate it too in a way that they could not have before. And that's not only true on an individual family level. I am telling you, I see it again as somebody who's involved in communal work and who's an observer of the community at large. It is true of our community at large as well. Whatever you want to call our community. The modern Orthodox community, that's a term that's not a good term. I don't like that term, but it's one that we frequently use. You want to call us the YU community, the RCA, OU community, whatever you want to call us. In our community, that broad effect is visible all the time. When you pursue your own spiritual growth and you're just willing to share that with others, you are lifting our entire community up with you. I think lots of times, young people your age experience a certain tension in our relationship with the broader, again, we'll just use the term modern Orthodox community. Sometimes we feel like we want to pursue our own spiritual growth, and therefore we need to cut ourselves off from a community that holds us back. I see that happen many times. Other times, people want to pursue spiritual growth, but feel like they can't cut themselves off from community, so they say, we're just going to compromise our spiritual aspirations, our spiritual goals, and we're not going to pursue it because we just want to fit in with the community that we grew up in. I think both of those situations are quite lamentable and sad. In the first case, look, I think there may be scenarios where that is necessary, where somebody does need to make a formal break in order to pursue their spiritual growth, but I certainly don't think that's a lechatchila by any measure. And in the latter case, it's just tragic. It's sad when people feel like they need to give up on their own relationship with Hashem in order to fit into a certain set standard of communal mores and communal norms. I don't think that choice needs to be made in most cases. I really, really do not. I think there is a way in which one can say, I'm going to pursue my spiritual growth to the maximal ability that I can. I'm going to pursue it to the absolute best that I can. And I'm still going to be a part of this community. And yeah, it requires a little social finesse. You need to have a social head on your shoulders. You can't be a weirdo. But if you're able to communicate with others, you're able to talk to others, you're able to share the experience that you have with them, you're able to explain to them or show them where you find meaning and value and purpose in Torah and mitzvot, in your Torah life, the amount that you can impact others is really incalculable. I mean that in the most literal sense. It is impossible to truly quantify the amount through which you could truly elevate our community and the Torah world around you. So if I leave you with one charge from the Mishnah, it is, from the delicate balance of spiritual selfishness and spiritual generosity at your stage, pursue both, because they're not contradictory. Invest in yourselves. Be the best that you could possibly be. Go back to your communities. Share that experience with them. And realize that you truly do have the power not only to better yourselves, but to really transform the world around you as well. Wish you all much hatzlacha in that mission, and thank you for your time. Have a good night, everyone.
Tremendous thank you, Rabbi Schreier, as always, for coming and sharing Devarei Torah. For those who would like Michal Schoenbrunn in a minute or